Okay. Yes, okay. I just want to acknowledge my co-authors, Carrie Budaba from our shop, the Center for Public Health, and Hank Stabler for this work. This work came out of work that we did for the state of Vermont. We had done a lot of work in looking at health reform in Vermont based on the Catamount Insurance Program. And in that effort, we discovered that there was a lot of churn going on. And so we followed up with additional studies with them to help them design their health insurance exchange. And so we did a more formal study on churn and looking at policy options for churn. Now, what is churn? Churn is basically turnover in insured populations, people moving in and out of plans and people moving to and from, either public plans to private plans or within public plans. And basically, it's due to income or familial circumstances or failure to pay premiums. We'll get into that in a minute. But why are we concerned about churn? Well, we're concerned about churn for a number of reasons. Basically, it adds to administrative costs of plans. And, and you'll see some data on this that came out of work in Louisiana. But it adds to the cost of private health, public health insurance and private health insurance for that matter. It disrupts population health insurance coverage. So people, when they drop insurance, they drop it for a reason. We'll talk about that. But they drop out of the insurance plan, so there's a gap in coverage. And that can lead to increased risk for poor health outcomes, not getting care when you need it. And so it also reduces the pool of the covered populations. And if your goal, like Vermont was, to have 96% of the population covered by the year 2010, that will mitigate against that, because people are going back and forth or dropping off. And so also churn now with the ACA, with the expansion of Medicaid and state insurance exchanges, will intensify the problem. Why? Because there'll be more people expected to come on Medicaid. And so states really need to address churn and in their health insurance exchanges. And some are and some aren't. And what we suggest is that states who are successful will keep their churn rates low and will cost them less to run their public and Medicaid programs and state-sponsored programs. Because as you know, many states have Medicaid programs, but they also have state-sponsored programs like Catamount Health, like Commonwealth Care, like Virago Care, like care across the country, different state plans, which many of which will continue. So we did this study, and basically the study is a threefold methodology. One is to determine what kind of policies were effective and would be effective in reducing churn. So we did a comprehensive literature review. We had interviews with state officials across the country. And we did analysis of enrollment data from Vermont's Catamount Health Insurance Program, which was the insurance program that was started after the 2007 health insurance reform in Vermont. So we had data on enrollment in that plan to really look at it from that perspective. And so the example that I use for churn in Vermont is that with Catamount Health is that the number of beneficiaries at any one time was approximately 10,000 people. Now, bear in mind, this is Vermont. You don't have a large population, but it really gives you an opportunity to look at people, what's going on. But so we saw 10,000 people in the plan. We were expected to see, based on projections before the legislation was being developed, approximately 18,000 people would be eligible. But when you look at a two-year period and people going on off and on, and look at the individual cases, you find that there are approximately 18,000 people in the plan. Then over a three-year period, you find that individuals enrolled in a three-year plan, we have more people joining the plan, but we had approximately 15,000 transitions between the state-sponsored insurance programs. That's from Green Mountain Care, which is a Medicaid program, to Catamount Health, to Dr. Dinosaur and different programs. And so in approximately 24% made one transition, 30% made two transitions, and 22% made three transitions. So there's lots of transitioning going on, in this case, between state-sponsored programs. In terms of just Catamount, we found that once enrolled, 67% of the population left Catamount within the three-year period. 85% enrolled and disenrolled once, 13% re-enrolled, disenrolled a second time, and 2% re-enrolled, disenrolled three or more times in Catamount. So it's a lot of changing going on. Every time you change, it causes, it's an administrative function. It also has other factors we talked about earlier. this is a little chart that shows you basically the time lapse between initial enrollment and disenrollment. And so you see the time lapse is really the first 3 or 4 months and all the changes going on. People get in, they get out quick for some reason. And so we have to find out what those reasons are and what we can do about them. This is a visual chart, and basically this is a little fancy chart we put together that shows you people went, I'll pick a top line, people went from the Green Mountain Care to Catamount, and they went off for a while, then they came back from Catamount. So Catamount's the red, the blank is nothing. So people came in and off and back on, so it really shows the constant movement of population from Medicaid to Catamount, back to off, back to Catamount, on the Medicaid, all of which requires a lot of upkeep. And so that was what Vermont was trying to do, was trying to mitigate against that when they were planning their exchange, and others have had as well. These other examples, most of the studies on churn have looked at Medicaid programs. And in Rhode Island, 25% of all enrollees had a gap in insurance coverage in 12-month period. About 60% of those had dropped off and returned within a year. Washington State, same thing. 36% of those covered were terminated and subsequently re-enrolled in the child health program. In Oregon, 15% of the Medicaid population was disenrolled and subsequently re-enrolled in their 2003 expansion of Medicaid. And so the amount of churn that it appears to be in state-administered programs, such as Medicaid or CHIP, varies by state. And it varies as a result of program organizations, which we'll get into in a minute, like eligibility rules, how you re-up. And what you make people, the kind of hoops you make people go through. They also vary by the economic health of the eligible population. If people have a constant income, they're less likely to churn. And seasonal economics contributes to that. If you have a population like in Washington County, Maine, where you pick blueberries and you don't have health and you don't get any money because you don't have anything else, and you fish a little bit, that kind of seasonal economy, which you can't do anything about from a policy perspective, at least in healthcare, it contributes to churn because people have money, don't have money. That's true in places like Maine, Vermont, Alaska, and a lot of the rural states. There's constant turnover in the ability to maintain an income. Nationally, it's a big problem as well. In fact, this study showed that had no drop-off occurred in CHIP across the country, the number of uninsured children in a given year would have fallen by a third, but because of drop-off, we weren't able to reduce the number of uninsured children in the population. So the major reason for churn, basically, a lot of it has to do with low retention rates. In other words, you don't keep people on the plan. So why is that? Renewal policies are one example, and we'll go into others. Inconsistent transition between programs. In other words, you have rules for Medicaid, but you don't have the same rules for the Catamount Health or the state-sponsored program. So, and you have different benefits, and there's a lot of work that's been done on that. There's a publication by RWJ came out in April that looked at how you do contracting in state plans to be able to minimize the inconsistent transition between programs. And it has to do with your contracting rules, which is a policy option that you might have to do to reduce that transition problem. Because when people can't, people who are less educated, perhaps, and lower income, it's hard for them to transition. When you have lots of rules, it's hard for them to transition through programs to meet those rules. And lastly, premiums are too expensive. Time and again, we did a small study of the subpopulation. We looked at Catamount. We found that just the fact that people don't have the money or aren't willing to spend that money, make a different choice about that money rather than keep on the plan. In fact, I think part of what you saw in the Catamount program in the first 3 months, people got on the plan. Everybody had to pay something in Catamount, unlike some of the other states. Whether it was $10 a month, they had to pay something. But people got on the plan because it looked cheap, but when they faced other bills, they just drop off. So premiums still are an issue in these plans. So what are some of the policy options? We're going to talk about three policy options. One has to do with eligibility, and the other has to do with renewal, and it has to do with how you structure your plan. Now, position of eligibility, what does that mean? Basically, it allows a qualified entity to grant a child temporary or adult temporary coverage based on the family separation of income so that a child can obtain medical care while the application is processed. And Louisiana is a state that's done this very successfully. So that's one way of people. And what does that mean for churn? Well, basically, if you can do that within state plans, so if one is transitioning from one plan to another and you can presume them to be eligible, then you can keep them from dropping off. Because once they drop off, it's hard to oftentimes started people back on. And let's say they have a medical emergency when they go to the ER and they get back on again. Continuous eligibility, and that's an option people states have. So in other words, many state programs, whether it's Medicaid or state-sponsored programs, they make you re-up every 6 months or every whatever the time period you want. You have to do it within 12 months based on federal regulations. But some states are thinking about just make people continuous eligible. So you have an income that makes you eligible, and even though you may reduce that income during the period of time which you have to drop off, you say, we're going to cover you for 12 months. Maine had a catastrophic illness program back in the 1970s which did that very thing. Once people qualified, they're on for a year. And so that's an option states can look at for, as far as using to keep people eligible so they're not coming in and going off. Because as you saw, the first 3-4 months are really crucial, at least for Vermont. Other options are the recertification process. And we'll talk a little bit about this, but ex parte renewal, off-cycle renewal, recertifications, passive renewal, proactive follow-up. And some states of Louisiana and Wisconsin have been very successful with using some of these claims. And states like Massachusetts and Vermont are now incorporating some of these into their health insurance exchanges. What are these? Ex parte renewal is when is a process that gives eligibility staff access to external information such as food stamps, state tax information, and other governmental databases so they can populate the application with a client. The whole idea is not, don't make the client go home and get all kinds of bills and get this and bring it back and go back and forth because they'll drop off. So they're able to renew without bringing in more information which when they've already have been eligible and been on the plan. Off-cycle renewal. Allow them to renew their insurance coverage by updating required information when they're applying for other types of plans. For example, if people go in and apply for food stamps and they're already on a Catamount Health, as an example, allow them to re-up Catamount Health based on that information and not wait for, even though Catamount Health would be re-upped a month later, have them do it all at one time, so make it easy for people. The whole idea is to have the information, make it easy for people to re-up, and so they won't fall off the plan. Passive renewal, that's where consumers are sent pre-filled renewal forms, where response is required only if the information has changed. They don't have to go and provide the same information. And then there's the other area of, and there's other examples of what I mentioned before, but other areas, another area would be standardized benefit packages. Because one of the things that happens to people is they get a plan, whether it's Medicaid or whether it's a state-sponsored plan, and they basically the coverage changes between plans. So there's not a set standard benefit package. And the thought is that if you standardize the benefit package, you'll mitigate many of the negative effects enrollees experience when their income changes and they are forced to change insurance plans. They know what they're being covered for, and they're less likely to drop off or not be covered when they change a different plan. And so these are some of the options states are doing. And a lot of states are, as I said, addressing churn and that issue. And I just want to talk a little bit about what's happened in Louisiana. A recent report came out this summer, the work that Dorn and all are doing in Louisiana. And this is an example of the impact of churn. In their eligibility program there that they implemented, they increased Medicaid participation and higher insurance rates for children, which they did. But in 1 year alone, when they used these eligibility policy rules in their plan, they were reported their savings of $1 to $1.1 million for enrollment, so making enrollment easier, and $8 to $12 million for renewals. That's their estimated savings in the state Medicaid budgets for doing these things. So they're huge, huge issues in terms of costs. And if you want to keep the cost of Medicaid down, you have to think about some of these very basic administrative issues. And then ACA, the ACA policy. ACA does require a simplification enrollment for physician Medicaid, and so states have to look at that to how they can make it simpler. Medicaid eligibility will become more standardized under ACA, and the individual mandate will require individuals to obtain insurance, and we thought that with that, even though churn can take place, that it will make it easier for people to stay on plans. And then an ACA policy also has the Exchange Navigator Initiative, which allows the states to have navigators to help people get on plans and stay on plans. And they're going to be different for each state, but states can take advantage of that plan, that opportunity, and get resources to do that. So that's a different issue compared to the other talks, and I'll be glad to take any questions.
So are there questions specifically for this talk?
Well, in a state like Vermont, where you only have very few providers to very few people, and if you're particularly in a rural area, you have grade C as the only provider in town, that hasn't been an issue. Whether you're in Burlington, where you have a big health medical center there, so it's really not really an issue. But that, if most, so most providers take Medicaid in Vermont, that could be an issue with in other areas where you don't have that.
Question was about...
Oh, yeah. What about providers taking different plans? Because that's also what they're doing now in writing contract language for different plans, so you can make sure there's a transition that provider will take that plan. Or you can, or they'll cover the cover you until you, for that condition, say you have a health condition, even though that provider doesn't take that plan, but it'll cover you for a period of time. It's one of the ways of writing contracts.
It sounded that you weren't explicit that in Vermont, pretty much all these changes were involuntary on the part of the individual. It seems to me as we move into a case where people have more choice, it's important to distinguish between voluntary changes and mandatory changes. And as we, I did a study in a county that has more people in North Carolina, Mecklenburg County has more people in Vermont. Spent a lot of time looking at Vermont. And we had five HMO plans. And it seems to be really important to make that distinction because the perception is that Medicaid people are always changing, you know. But the reality is we found that the voluntary change of health plans, when there was no price error, no price changes, unlike commercial insurance, was exactly right on the same range reported for commercial improvement by patients.
I'm not sure I totally understand the question, because what you're saying is that voluntary changing, that people voluntary change and don't voluntary change plans, that distinction
so are
there?
Are they forced to change plans because of the changing plans?
Well, they're forced to change plans because they change their status. Either they are up in income. So, for example, if you're on Medicaid in Vermont, you're eligible for, say, 100% of poverty. Then what Catamount said was, well, we'll make you eligible at 300% of poverty. So you, once you get above that, you can only be eligible for Catamount, so you have to switch over. I don't call that voluntary.
No, it's involuntary.
That's involuntary.
It's involuntary.
Right.
And it seems like the answer is to make one plan, which I guess you're on your part doing, is to simplify the administrative process.
Yeah, treat everything as one plan, one state plan. You can't do it in the private sector, while they're trying to influence the private plans to go along with standardized benefits. As also to be able to get on the exchange, to be able to get the same type of plan they want to get from the private sector. Because after all, I'll stop.
Yes.
Well, again, what you're asking about the disabled population and how that would affect, how that would be a plan for, because people have different needs. And I guess what the question sounds, it sounds like the question is about, not about health insurance, but services that people need when they're disabled? No? That's a good question. I don't know. I'll have to ask Betsy Forrest, but she just retired. So, but thank you. That's a good question. I just don't know the answer to that question.
So I'd like to open up the questions to any of the speakers. I know that some people have hanging questions they had before. Dr. Broom, please.
I have a question for Dr. Hall. I was wondering if you could just provide an update of what's currently going on in the ground in Florida right now
So the question is, what's the state of health policy in Florida with regard to Medicaid specifically? Certainly, in terms of the Affordable Care Act, we don't want any money. So we're not going to expand Medicaid. That's the party line right now. In terms of the demonstration, they are going to be pushing the demonstration out beyond the five counties. And so they are, when are we going to go statewide? I think in a year or so they're going to go statewide with the demonstration that I described here. So everybody who is eligible will be required to enroll in a managed care plan, and that's what the state is thinking now. In terms of other things like the exchanges, there has been very little movement on developing exchanges. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a two-part question for you. I'm going to ask you, some of your statistics showed overlapping confidence limits but still had significant differences. Maybe you want to mention why that's the case, because one thinks of overlapping is not significant. Secondly, I just wanted to, even though I know it's been in the test, but the other issue is, what do you attribute the HMO plans to be different in there, to see differences?
Why do I think I'm seeing the differences? Yeah. One, I think the HMOs do business very, very differently. So as I explained earlier, the HMOs are mostly for-profit. They are paid on a capitated arrangement from the state. So I think there's some stronger utilization controls there on their part, sort of thinking about how they spend and give access to other things. They also are, one of the big things that I think is very different between the HMOs and the PSNs is the fact that the HMOs are generally a national organizations, and so I think that local orientation or that local understanding is absent from the HMOs. And so that's some of the reasons why that's sort of a part of the motivation for the study, is that some of the organizational differences were there.
So it's not HMOs per se, it's HMOs the way they're structured and cooperating.
Within the reform, yes, perhaps. And that's what we want to investigate a little bit further. Christine.
I would add that the PSNs are provider-sponsored, and we were fortunate to have mixed methods in this analysis, so not just the data, but lots of interviewing and conversations. They look at the Medicaid population as their patients, whether they're insured or not. Okay. So whether they go off Medicaid, or they stay on Medicaid, or then they become in private insurance, many of these large hospitals, safety net hospitals, and these physicians were very committed to care management in a way that we cross the status of insurance. At least that's what they were claiming. And this data would suggest, from the perspective of the family, they are doing that.
Do you want to repeat that?
I think you got that one. So there was a question about statistical significance.
Yeah.
And I'd like to broaden that a little. It seems to me possible that with one of the plans being 55-45 with a chronic condition, at least one chronic condition, and only 10% overall, that you might find something if you use a less coarse way of rating people's level of need.
Okay.
And if you look within the population of people, of all people rated by need, you might find that you have that interaction. That you
okay, that's a good thought. Thank you. Yeah.
And actually, also, I was wondering if you asked any questions about parental satisfaction in terms of care coordination, or maybe if this was some sort of mixed methods thing, if there was any qualitative opportunity for parents to talk about that sort of care coordination.
So the question was, in the survey, were there any questions specifically on care coordination, and then whether or not we actually even had an opportunity to talk to people about care coordination. We did do some qualitative interviewing with Medicaid beneficiaries, not necessarily parents, and we didn't really sort of ask directly about care coordination. We asked more to tell me about your experiences, how easy or hard was it for you to get care, And, you know, generally, to be fair, most people in Medicaid are satisfied with the care that they get. I mean, you do see very high rates of satisfaction. On the care coordinator, not high rates, but in our conversations with people, it sort of reported that people, unless they had a specific problem, they didn't sort of speak to some of that. With respect to actually asking a question specifically about care coordination in the survey, we didn't ask that. That's not part of the standardized sets of questions on the surveys. there were questions that sort of allude to care coordination, like, did you have a problem getting a specialist, and so forth.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question.
Was your analysis before the state reform this year?
Are you talking about the single payer reform?
About the transition from Oregon to Medicaid managed care.
Well, basically, our previous study was 2008 through 2010, 3 years of data on that. But you know, Vermont is unlike every other state in the country.
It's just
Louisiana. I'm sorry. Louisiana study came from the same about the same time period because Dorn was funded by Robert Johnson as well to do the same type of study there. So I think it came between that period. So, yeah, I'm sorry.
Question here.
Well, that's a great question because they're struggling. The question is, as Vermont moves to a single-payer system, how might that affect churn? Quickly, they'll move to a single, at least they plan to move there unless they're blocked by the federal government. After all, you all know the ACA doesn't allow them to do that until 2017. That's in the law. Our friends put that in there. Not my friends, but anyway, I'll show my bias. But now what they're trying to do is plan for exchange, but they're really planning for the single-payer system. But that will be more than one payer. But they will design the plan so they'll mitigate against churn in that by having a similar type. They won't have one plan fits all. They'll have different plans, but they will obviously working towards the eligibility requirements and the benefit package. They're working towards all that to say make it easier.
One more question.
Only the work by Sarah Rosenbaum looks at different Medicaid programs, some of the Medicaid populations by state. Her work is probably seminal. She's at Washington, in D.C. at George Washington.
Okay, I'd like to thank the panel, and if you have questions,